Hagar of the Pawn Shop by Fergus Hume. Chapter 1. The Coming of Hagar. Jacob Dix was a pawnbroker, but not a Jew. Notwithstanding his occupation and the Hebraic sound of his baptismal name, he was so old that no one knew his real age, so grotesque in looks that children jeered at him in the streets, so avaricious that throughout the neighborhood he was called Skinflint. If he possessed any hidden good qualities to counterbalance his known bad ones, no person had ever discovered them, or even had taken the trouble to look for them. Certainly Jacob, surly and uncommunicative, was not an individual inclined to encourage uninvited curiosity. In his pawn shop he lived like an ogre in a fairy tale castle, and no one ever came near him save to transact business, to wrangle during the transaction thereof, and to curse him at its conclusion. Thus it may be guessed that Jacob drove hard bargains. The pawn shop, situated in Carvey's Crescent, Lambeth, furthermore resembled an ogre's castle, inasmuch as, though not filled with dead men's bones, it contained the relics and wreckage, the flotsam and jetsam, of many lives, of many households. Placed in the center of the dingy crescent, it faced a small open space, and the entrance of the narrow lane which led therefrom to the adjacent thoroughfare. In its windows, begrimed with the dust of years, a heterogeneous mixture of articles was displayed, ranging from silver teapots to well-worn saucepans, from gold watches to rusty flatirons, from the chisel of a carpenter to the ivory-framed mirror of a fashionable beauty. The contents of Dix's window typified in little the luxury, the meanness, the triviality, and the decadence of latter-day civilization. There was some irony, too, in the disposition of incongruous articles, for the useful and useless were placed significantly in proximity, and the trifles of frivolity were mingled with the necessaries of life. Here a Dresden china figure, bright-hued and dainty, simpered everlastingly at a copper warming-pan. There a silver-handled dagger of the Renaissance lay with a score of those cheap dinner-knives whose bluntness one execrates in third-rate restaurants. The bandaged hand of a pharaonic mummy touched an agate saucer holding defaced coins of all ages, of all nations. Watches in alternate rows of gold and silver dangled over fantastic temples and ships of ivory carved by laborious Chinese artificers. On a square of rich brocade, woven of silks, multicolored as a parrot's plumage, were piled in careless profusion medals, charms, old-fashioned rings set with dim gems, and the frail glass bangles of Indian notch girls. A small cabinet of Japanese lacquer, black, with grotesque gilded figures thereon, talismans of coral from southern Italy, designed to avert the evil eye, jeweled pipes of Turkey, set roughly with blue turquoise stones, Georgian caps with embroideries of tarnished gold, amulets, earrings, bracelets, snuff boxes, and mosaic brooches from Florence. All these frivolities were thrown the one on top of the other, and all were overlaid with fine gray dust, wreckage of many centuries, dry bones of 100 social systems, dead or dying. What a commentary on the durability of empire, on the inherent pride of pygmy man. Within doors the shop was small and dark. A narrow counter running lengthways divided the whole into two parts. On the side nearest the entrance, three wooden screens, by their disposition, formed four sentry boxes, into which customers stepped when bent on business. Jacob, wizened, cunning,